Okay, hello, and welcome everyone to another episode of Innovation in Education, eCampus News' podcast series on the latest and greatest in education tech and its application in the higher ed space. My name is Kevin Hogan. I am content director for eCampus News, and I am happy you clicked through and found us today as we delve into the world of education, innovation, and the future of learning. Today's episode is going to be packed with insights and inspiration, so buckle up and get ready for this engaging discussion. My guest is Dr. Nick Swain, who began serving as president of North Idaho College in the fall of 2022. Dr. Swain came to NIC after serving as the executive director of For Virginia, a collaborative partnership between eight universities in that state. He is also the founder of a comprehensive academic innovation ecosystem at James Madison University. Over his past 22 years in higher education, Dr. Swain has developed extensive experience in accreditation, recruiting, and retention. As an academic department head and center director, he served as an area lead during multiple accreditation reviews, where he was involved in the entire two-year cycle that comprises a scheduled full accreditation visit. Recruiting programs he developed also resulted in a five-fold increase in departmental enrollments. Between 2007 and 2010, he grew Virginia's first Lego League, a robotics STEM program for 9 to 14-year-olds, which went from 138 teams to the world's largest program with nearly 700 teams. President Swain grew up mostly in the Moscow, Idaho area and earned his bachelor's degree from the University of Idaho. He went on to earn a master's degree in public administration from Northeastern University and a doctorate in post-secondary strategic leadership from JMU. I found his ideas and insights to be refreshingly frank, and I hope you do too. Have a listen. Okay, Nick, thanks so much for your time and your insights today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you say that on the front end.
Well, and as we discussed, you know, before we started recording, I think we had spoken at some point in the past 4 years. As with everything else, everything's a little fuzzy during COVID, the when and the where. But I know you have been busy since our last conversations. Maybe you can kind of fill us in on the latest and greatest of what you've been doing.
Sure. We actually started the esports program. I think that's when we chatted last. Before I left JMU, and that's going well. XLab was up and running. It was really good. I think it's still doing okay. And the esports was just kind of the last thing that I did before leaving, and then finished my PhD in that around 2020. And you know, I'm kind of a non-traditional guy anyway, so I got my PhD way late and wanted to take on other roles and thinking about what it would take to really create an innovative campus as opposed to just an innovative space on a campus. And so started looking at opportunities to take on a more of a leadership role at a campus level and came to North Idaho College as the president.
Well, that's great. Congratulations. That seems like certainly a leap across the country, if not anything else. But I know a lot of the innovative strategies that we discussed again with the XLab, I'm sure that you've brought with you up to Idaho. Maybe talk a little bit about the size of the school, the shape of the school, how your work has changed, as you said, as you're going from maybe what was a facility and a lab at a campus to something that is campus-wide.
I'll say part of my approach to innovation really came from Idaho. I grew up here. I graduated from the University of Idaho and then went out and did my career in the Army and ended up back at JMU. So coming back here was an opportunity to bring that innovation culture to a campus. You know, it's really hard to, at a four-year institution, people typically go to a four-year institution. The success of a four-year education is you get a bachelor's degree. And so North Idaho College is a community college. Well, a lot of folks, and these are things that you don't think about until you've really been embedded in a community college, but success at a community college doesn't always mean getting an associate's degree. We have a great math program. And so students that want to become engineers take all the 6 or 7 math courses that they need to get into an engineering program. They take those here and then they transfer to a 4-year. Mm-hmm. And so they don't complete their associate's degree. And so those are things you don't think about. And you look at sometimes the statistics of success at a community college and you think, well, they're only 30% of the kids that are going to the community college are getting their associate's degree. They must be not, you know, doing something wrong. Well, no, it's because a lot of folks just stop in, get what they need, and then they go out either into the workforce or they go on to a 4-year institution or something else. And so 30% success rate on associates is actually kind of high. But the college has just under 4,000 full-time equivalent students. We have a state-of-the-art career and technical education center that really puts my ex-lab to shame in terms of its capabilities. It's really phenomenal. And then we have a workforce training center, which is our non-credit based program where we train our students and many of them non-traditional students to upskill or get the skills they need in collaboration with an employer. And so those are kind of the traditional things that we do. Three parts: the associate's degree, traditional associate's degree program, whether they finish or not, to transfer to a 4-year, the career and technical education for credit, so you get a skilled trade, and then the non-credit workforce training. Those are the traditional roles of a community college, and that's what we're doing. Probably total of about 10,000 students, 4,000 in the transfer programs, either CTE or other. So that kind of breaks it down.
And again, I hate talking about it, but the pandemic is still kind of within the context of conversations, especially when it comes to education and higher education. A lot of hyperbole over the past couple of years about the death of higher education, the violent changes that may occur. There's different ways when you look at assessment technologies and the needs for degrees and traditional degrees and the change in the behavior of students, really. I mean, just the past couple of years of how their expectations of how they're going to be educated. Talk a little bit about your experience through this time and any sort of innovations that you've kind of seen, you know, spring from the madness.
So I'll tell you something that we are currently in the midst of doing now, which I think is probably the most beneficial innovation if we can pull it off. And that is, traditionally, as I said, you had these workforce training programs, not for credit. You had career and technical education, and then you had the transfer programs or the traditional associate's degree programs. And at most community colleges, ours included, those are all treated completely separate silos. And so you don't move from one to the other. But I think now one of the issues that we have as a country with higher ed is really being able to express clearly the value proposition for the students. And so the value proposition for students and parents typically now is, what kind of a job am I going to get? Am I going to get if I spend 2 years in a training program, am I going to make enough money to offset the loss of income during that 2-year period and the pay differential, right? So if I just started working at a one of our favorite food service organizations now, you can make $18 an hour. So if you take 2 years of school or 4 years of school, are you going to graduate making more than $18 an hour? And not only do you have the $18 an hour, but you've got anywhere from $4,000 to $20,000 or $100,000 in debt that you've got to pay off. Are you going to earn enough to make it worthwhile to pay all that off? If not, you know, making some of those smart choices. So one of the things that we're trying to do is create academic hubs, if you will, where so we teach students how to weld, how to run a milling machine. Some of those are just weekend classes, not for credit. Some of them are 2-year certifications on being a millwright. That's a 2-year certification. But the non-credit courses you may take for a weekend, over the course of a year, you take all those courses. It's the same content as if you'd taken a year-long certification program. But we don't allow the students to do the non-credit stuff and transfer that into the 4-credit stuff. So they end up, if they decide to kind of upskill, they have to redo all that. Mm-hmm. And so we're working now to figure out, make that a seamless pathway. So if you kind of get your fingers dirty with the machining and you say, well, this is really cool, I want to upskill, then you can move from there right into a machinist. And then some of those students that have done that program realize that while they were in high school, they weren't good at math or science because they didn't see an application. But now they get into the machine tool or carpentry, whatever the case may be, and they get they figure out what it really is. Then they say, you know, I actually can do that math, and I can do, because now it's they're doing it for a purpose. And so being able to transition those folks that are kind of learning the fundamentals of engineering by doing, how do we allow those students to continue on and actually get an engineering degree? And so we would do the, at a community college, we would do the pre-engineering program, all the math and some of the science and physics behind it, and then be able to transfer those folks directly and efficiently into a four-year program where they can complete their engineering degree and go off and really do what they're capable of doing, as opposed to what they've self-limited, you know, their career pathways to.
Now, have you seen any or have you worked at all with micro-credentialing? I know that that is something that is kind of part and parcel to some of the strategies you're talking about.
Yeah, that's all part of it. I mean, we've got to figure out how do you, if you start with, you can start at either end. You start an engineering degree and say, what are the, how do you encapsulate those things that we want students to do into three or four courses of content, and say, if you finish this, it's going to take you one step closer and add value to you and your employer so that you can get promoted or whatever the case may be. So you can do that and stop, or you can continue on, take another three or four credit or three or four course block of classes that will get you to the next level. So exactly, micro-credentialing. And the same thing applies to the non-credit side. So if you do these things, we'll credential you as a apprentice welder, or whatever. Sometimes the title doesn't really, we don't have the titles, but we'll give you that credential that says you can do something that's meaningful to your employer. So when you hand them the credential, it means something. It's not good enough just to make certificates that we think are valuable. We've got to work with the employers to make sure that they're valuable to them as well.
Yeah, it does seem to be such a perception game, right? I mean, even again, when everything went online and you saw a lot of online classes going up, even some of the big dogs, right, the Ivy Leagues providing certificates and using, there's some brand confusion. There's a big difference between getting it online or in person. Yeah. At a community college level, I mean, you're there in Idaho. I would guess that the majority of the folks who are going through your program are looking for employment in your particular region. Is that a cultural shift that you have to kind of influence the wider community, that, you know, these idea of micro-credentialing and courses are somehow worthwhile?
Well, that's a great question. I don't think so. I think if we as an institution, North Idaho College, we have a reputation of producing really well-prepared students. So if, as we produce these micro-credentials, it's incumbent upon us to work with the employers to say, what do you need and what's the next step? And so as we build these programs, we build them in collaboration with employers, and they trust us that if we say this person can do these things, that we have evidence and have trained them to do those things, and are, you know, we're putting our name on that as well. And that's our accountability. And so we've done very well. You know, we have one of our kind of signature programs is our nursing program. And a lot of people don't realize this, that when you graduate from a four-year institution as a nurse, you take the same exact test that our students take after 2 years. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It's called the NCLEX, right? So the NCLX, and it's a national exam for registered nurses. So you can get a bachelor's of science in nursing from a four-year institution, which means you've got all the gen eds on top of the nursing skills, or you can just get an RN from a two-year institution and you take the same exact test. So we just went through a recent accreditation review for our nursing program, and our students are getting about 98 or 99% of the students that start the program finish the program, and about 99%, 98, 99% are passing the NCLEX, which is a much higher pass rate than many of the 4 years. And so that's really a testament to the quality of the programs, the quality of facilities, the quality of the faculty. And the other thing is we generally take a much broader range of students than a four-year does. Just getting into a four-year institution is a little more of a filter than getting into a two-year. So we're taking everybody and having a higher pass rate. And so when you do that in multiple programs, and we do, you gain the credibility to get to be able to work with employers to give those micro credentials that are meaningful. I think that's really, it's a whole package deal that you can't just say we're going to give micro credentials. They have to be meaningful to the employers, and you have to be credible in what you're offering.
So it sounds to me that you had discussions with the employers. I mean, they are part and parcel of creating the curriculum.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I mean, there's for things like nursing, there's a national curriculum that you have to follow. There are certain skills. And of course, that's what they test for. There are certain skills in other areas like welding. You know, we can be a little bit more flexible. There's still tests that you have to take to be certified in welding, but we can add things and take things off depending on the needs of our employers. And a lot of those skills are pretty common. So there's not a huge differential in if somebody needs a welder, they need somebody that has all those capabilities. And so, you know, generally speaking, the national certification is pretty close to meeting their needs.
Now, is this something that is still kind of in process? I mean, or do you feel that this is, there's still kind of an evolution when it comes to standardizing this sort of strategy when it comes to assessment?
Oh, this kind of hub where you're going from non-credit to associates and on to bachelors, I think a lot of folks have tried to do that in the past and in different ways, or maybe limited in scope. But I think it's something a lot of folks, a lot of community colleges and four-year institutions are looking at it as a way to do it. And so, you know, we have part of my repertoire back at JMU was doing things a little bit different and then really trying to accentuate it.
Right. Well, you're definitely certainly further along the path. I mean, you're kind of ahead of the pack when it comes to a lot of this stuff, especially at the community college level. What is your advice to some of our readers, our listeners, who may not be as far along in terms of how to prioritize a strategy of going towards a micro-credential path?
So I think in almost every case, the issue is one of visioning, right? And faculty, I don't think it matters whether you're in the non-credit, credit, career and technical education side or what. The faculty ultimately are interested in how do we help our students? How do we help them succeed? How do we help them get better? And if you can frame it in that way, is this is going to be a big benefit to our students long-term and to our community long-term, you can get around some of the traditional roadblocks of territory and silos. And those are the things that really become roadblocks for progress is, you know, the faculty don't see how this is going to help, or they see it as a threat. You're changing things and they're not sure. And so if you can really frame it in a way that like, this is a win for everyone and break down those barriers, I think that's probably the biggest challenge. And we made really good progress with that here. And so the faculty, the academic side of campus is really getting behind it. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge that you have at an institution.
Yeah. Now, how about your own checklist as you look over the 2 or 3 years hence? What are your hopes for next steps, I guess, you know, specifically when it comes to these particular strategies?
Well, we're in the process of doing our new strategic plan. And so we're building that into the strategic plan and trying to work through what are the interim steps that will be needed. But we're while I say that, we're also not waiting for that to come to completion before we start working on it. And so we're actually starting back at the dual credit side. So students that are still in high school, getting them lined up and getting some of the prerequisites out of the way so they feel more self-efficacy. They feel they can succeed when they get to college. So getting more students to participate in that, getting them to come on to finish their associate's degree. Those are that recruiting issue. And it goes back to what you said about earlier about the enrollment numbers. There's still a lot of students out there. The challenge we have is that there are students that are not advancing from high school onto post-secondary training at a time when the country needs more people with post-secondary education. So for us, it's value proposition canvas that we worked on back at XLab. How do you present the value proposition to parents and students so that students see the return on investment and keeping those enrollment numbers strong and increasing the percentage of students that go on to 2 and 4 year institutions?
Well, Nick, it's always exciting stuff. You're doing a lot of really kind of innovative, interesting things that I know our readers and our listeners soak up. Again, appreciate your time and your insights and look forward to following your continued success.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Kevin.
And that's all we have for this month's episode. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform and be sure to bookmark ecampusnews.com for similar content. Until next month, I'm Kevin Hogan.